The previous administration may be gone, but the decisions it made continue to echo throughout our government. Perhaps nowhere is that more stark than in the makeup of the Supreme Court, where the blatant obstruction of a constitutionally mandated appointment by Barack Obama was followed by three far-right appointments in a single presidential term. And now come cases that many have feared this SCOTUS lineup was designed to address in ways most Americans can't even imagine. For a look at this daunting scenario, I'm pleased to welcome author and attorney Dr. Jay Michelson back to State of Belief Radio. Jay, it's good to have you with us again.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
Let's start with the situation you wrote compellingly about this week in the Daily Beast. The headline reads, "This case will mark the beginning of the end for Roe v. Wade." What's the case?
So this is a case challenging a Mississippi abortion law, which effectively bans abortion after 15 weeks, which is an advance from where Roe versus Wade had it. Basically, it sort of slides the goalposts and makes it just that much harder to get an abortion. And the only real question in the case is whether the Supreme Court will allow a little restriction, a lot of restriction, or actually just throw out Roe versus Wade entirely.
How did this case make it all the way to the Supreme Court?
Well, this case is designed to make it all the way to the Supreme Court. In fact, a number of states are kind of falling all over each other, trying to get a case that goes to the Supreme Court to test Roe versus Wade. Since we know that three of the court's six conservatives were specifically vetted to overturn Roe versus Wade. I mean, this is what they were created for. This is why they came up through the system and why they were suggested by the Federalist Society and why they were appointed by Donald Trump. So the idea of these laws is to just blatantly challenge Roe versus Wade. So in this case, the lower court opinion said, well, this is obviously unconstitutional. This is clearly against Roe versus Wade. And that's the whole point. The point was to make it as easy as possible to lose at the district court level and then the circuit court level so they could get right to the Supreme Court. And there's another law that just got passed out of Texas that's very similar.
Yeah. Jay, how much of this is about religious dogma and how much of it is science and medicine?
Oh, 100-0. There is certainly no science or medicine, especially around the 15-week line. I mean, what the difference is between 15, I wrote in my Daily Beast article, the only significance of 15 is that it's less than 24, which is the Roe versus Wade number, and more than zero. There's no scientific basis for this whatsoever. This is just politics. It's no secret that Donald Trump won the election in 2016 because of the support of the hard right, the religious right, so-called religious right. And this is payback. And they knew exactly why they were voting for him. And this was one of the main reasons. And so this is entirely, whether you want to call it religion or politics, this is catering to a part of the Republican base.
The justices have just agreed to hear this case, but a ruling is expected in October. Is that right?
No, they'll hear the case in October. So I would expect, it depends how long they want to kind of sit on it. And it's actually very politically relevant. If this were, if this is one of the first cases that the court hears in its October term, it could be decided in December, January, or February, let's say, of 21-22. Mm-hmm. That would make it a pretty significant election issue because that will give, assuming Roe is cut back, that will give all of so-called red states the opportunity to really restrict abortion. And so then that becomes much more of a political issue for the 2022 election. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it could actually go as late as a year from now. We may not have a ruling in this case for a year, in which case we'll see how that affects the political process.
I just have to ask you this. Has Amy Coney Barrett done anything of note yet that would confirm the well-founded fears of her critics, or Is there maybe some evidence that she may be more than just an ideologue?
I don't think there's that much evidence either way. It's been interesting. You know, this term has been a relatively boring term for the Supreme Court, although there's one major religion case that's still to be decided, the Fulton case about whether adoption agencies can turn away all kinds of people, LGBT people, but also people who aren't religious or aren't religious in the right way. I expect that will be the first case really where we'll see the court's conservative religious side flex its muscles. The only cases we've really seen so far have been on the pandemic, where the court, in a run of opinions, has not only allowed all kinds of exemptions, or forced, rather, all kinds of exemptions to COVID safety regulations for churches, they've kind of gone out of their way, led by Justice Gorsuch, to kind of add language about how religious claims are more important than any other kind of claim because they're constitutional. That's actually a very important doctrine that the court has never adopted before. That would certainly mean the Fulton case, I think, is already open and shut about adoption, but that would certainly mean impacts on Roe versus Wade as well. But I think, you know, remember that Justice Barrett is the most junior justice on the court, so she's not going to get a lot of opportunities to write opinions in these high-profile cases. She certainly voted with the conservative majority all of the time, just like she did before she was appointed, by the way, 100% taking kind of the conservative substantive line on cases. But I don't think we've really seen yet any evidence one way or the other. You know, we knew her questions at oral argument are very sharp, are very pointed. She's obviously very intelligent. We knew that going in. This is not someone who's just kind of a, you know, a placeholder. I mean, she's really a strong legal thinker. But she's also been 100% conservative so far.
Well, Jay, the really good piece that you wrote this last week makes the reader think that you think it's going to be up there and be shot down. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question that Roe is going to be severely limited by this case. The question is how severely. And again, that could range from totally overturning the law and allowing all abortion restrictions, including total bans. It could be chipping away. It could be a little bit technical about what the standard is for chipping away at Roe. So there's kind of a range of, for pro-choice people, a range of bad news. And we won't know for some time which of those is chosen. But I'd be extremely surprised if this case leaves current law in place the way it is now.
How do you think it's going to be debated?
This is going to be a constitutional argument. And, you know, for folks who follow this issue closely, they might know this, but others might not. You know, the abortion right hinges it doesn't have the strongest textual foundation. Obviously, there's nothing in the Constitution which says that women have the right to control their own bodies. But that principle that women as a subset of people have the right to control their own bodies in this democracy is seen to be kind of embedded in the Constitution and in the Bill of Rights. But there's no sentence which says women have the right to control their own bodies. And so the foundation for the abortion right is what's sometimes called the right to privacy. We might really think of it as the right to bodily integrity. It's the right that I, as a human being, have not given my body over to the state to be regulated however the state feels like doing it. To me, that's a very clear principle, but that's not something that's written in the text of the Constitution. And so the people who are originalists or textualists who take a very sort of narrow, like if it's not written in the text of the Constitution, it's not a constitutional right, you know, Roe is very vulnerable. So I would not expect, it'll be one of those weird cases where everyone on one side of the argument is sort of secretly motivated by a religious teaching or pleasing a religious constituency. But what we're talking about on the surface is this matter of constitutional theory.
I see. What are you keeping your eyes on related to religious liberty, that even if it's not related to Roe v. Wade?
Well, the Fulton case, the adoption case, that is the case of the year for religion. It is almost certainly going to go in the pro-religious, again, pro-right-wing religious, anti-LGBT and anti-church-state separation way. And again, a little bit like the Mississippi abortion case, it's a question of how much. So will this be a narrow exemption for this particular provider of adoption and foster care services? Will it be something broader? I suspect it will be extremely broad. If you look at particularly Justice Gorsuch, but also Justice Barrett and Justice Thomas and Justice Alito, I mean, that's four votes of people who have gone on record as saying, you know, a religious claim basically trumps every other kind of claim. And that means a blanket constitutional religious exemption for everything. So if I have a race non-discrimination law, but I have a racist belief in my understanding of religion, I could claim that my racist religious belief trumps not only that law, but other constitutional claims as well. So I should be able to discriminate on the basis of race if I have a religious reason. That's the logic. And I think it's maybe a coin toss. We don't know if Fulton is going to come out that way. I'm sure I'll be back on the program when it does come out, because this is a very important case. But it might. And that would really be an earthquake for how any religious claim is handled. You know, you and I have been following this issue now for going on 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's piecemeal. So this state has a religious exemption, or this place has a religious exemption. But if this Fulton case goes in the extreme way, there won't need to be religious exemptions, because that's going to be found right in the Constitution. Of course, it's ironic that the same justices who will invent this whole set of rights in one case are saying that, well, if it's not written down in the case of Roe versus Wade, it doesn't exist. But that being that as it may, I mean, that's the major religion case. It should be the biggest religious liberty case since Hobby Lobby. And it could come out next week. We don't know. Probably they're saving it for toward the end of June, as they often do. But sometime in the next few weeks, it will come down.
What's a citizen to do at this point? Because it seems to me now everybody's excited because the court has said we're going to rule on this. It's in the hands of the court. They're the only ones that can do anything at this point, regardless of what everyone else is saying. Do you see it that way, or is there any give and take that might change during the whole process?
No, it's too late. It's too late for this right. It's too late for this court. And it's too late for this case. This is part of what's challenging about this issue. People's eyes glazed over when, you know, we talk about Supreme Court nominees, certainly other court nominees, because it's, you know, it's talked about at the hearings, but nothing really happens. So the justice is put on the court, is seated, and then we all move on to other things, you know, and then a year or two later, some case like this comes along and all of a sudden people are getting angry, but it's too late to get angry. So, but I'm glad that you mentioned that, because as I actually want to throw in a little optimistic note here.
Good.
So my assumption is this case is going to go badly for the pro-choice side, and that many states are going to enact very significant abortion restrictions, if not total bans, very soon, within a year. That is actually not what a large majority of Americans support. It's a little tricky because Americans say, about 80% of Americans say that Roe versus Wade should be left alone. That's an astonishing number, right? That means that includes about 60% of Republicans, right? So that's a huge number. It's tricky because most people don't really know what Roe versus Wade really says. And so they say, well, but some restrictions should be allowed. So it's not really clear what that means, but there's certainly a clear pro-choice majority for the core right that women have to control their own body. Yeah. Right? That is it's not a close case. So this is a minority opinion that the Supreme Court is going to impose on the United States. And when these state legislatures start passing these abortion restrictions, then it'll be time for citizens to do something, right? It'll be time to flip as many of those state houses as possible. It'll be time for this to be the number one issue for many voters, not just one among many. And it'll be a time to really look at this in the Congress as well, right? I mean, if we didn't have the kind of compromised confirmation processes that we had for these three Trump appointees, right? Remember, all three are there under a shadow, right? Justice Gorsuch, his seat belonged to Merrick Garland. Justice Kavanaugh, unaddressed sexual assault and rape allegations with more evidence that came out after his hearings that made it seem even more likely that Dr. Blasey Ford was telling the truth. And Justice Barrett, who was rushed in the election, even though the same Senate had just said, the same people said a few years ago, no, we have to wait a whole year. So all three of these have kind of a cloud over them, and they are going to be in the majority of this decision. And so it's time to really connect the dots. So, yes, it's too late for a citizen to do anything about this case. But it's not too late to make sure that the next one doesn't happen. And the way to do that is to have state legislatures that reflect people, that remove these outrageous voting restrictions, which continue to have been passed in the last several months, so that we can actually have free and fair elections, and make this an issue that matters in the 2022 congressional midterm. This should be, if the timing goes the way I think it will go, this should be one of the major issues next year, and that's when it's time to get involved.
Dr. Jay Michelson is an author, an attorney, and an activist. He's also a rabbi and a meditation teacher who balances all of these roles in a wise and graceful way, still finding time to always answer when we call at State of Belief. Jay Michelson's books include God versus Gay, The Religious Case for Equality, and Enlightenment by Trial and Error, 10 Years on the Slippery Slopes of Jewish Spirituality, Postmodern Buddhism, and Other Mystical Heresies. Jay, we just are very grateful. Thank you.
That's very kind. It's my pleasure.